This is VOA News. Via remote, I'm Liz Palka. Russian police arrested more than 3,000 people and used force to break up rallies and protests across the country Saturday. Tens of thousands of protesters defied police warnings to demand the release of Kremlin critic Alexei Navalny. Navalny had called on his supporters to protest after being arrested last weekend as he returned to Russia from Germany for the first time since being poisoned with a nerve agent. He says the poison was slipped to him by state security agents in August. The U.S. strongly condemned the arrests and harsh tactics used against protesters and journalists in cities throughout Russia. That's according to a State Department spokesperson Sunday. Britain is expanding a coronavirus vaccination program that has seen almost 6 million people get the first of two doses. This, even as the country's death toll in the pandemic approaches 100,000. UK Health Secretary Matt Hancock said on Sunday that three quarters of the UK's over 80s have received a vaccine shot. But he warned that authorities were a long, long way away from being able to ease lockdown restrictions.
The lockdown is starting to bring cases down, but we're a long, long, long way from being low enough. Because the case rate was incredibly high, and you can see the pressure on the NHS. You can see it every day.
Health officials aim to vaccinate 15 million people, including everyone over 70, by February 15th. Chinese rescue teams have recovered 11 miners trapped in a gold mine by an explosion 2 weeks ago. Local media said the first miner was rescued from the mine in Shandong province in the east of the country on Sunday morning. This is VOA News. The Biden administration will work closely with Israel on regional security issues and to build on the country's regional normalization agreements. That is what White House National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan told his Israeli counterpart, according to a statement on Sunday. On a call with Israel's Mir Ben-Shabbat, they discussed opportunities to enhance the partnership over the coming months, including by building on the success of Israel's normalization arrangements with UAE, Bahrain, Sudan, and Morocco. Sullivan also extended an invitation to begin a strategic dialogue in the near term. A female prime minister in Estonia, Estonia's two biggest political parties, say they have clinched a deal to form a new government to be led by Kaja Kallas. Kallas will be the first female prime minister in the Baltic country's history. The party councils of the opposition center-right Reform Party and the ruling left-leaning Center Party are expected to vote on Sunday in favor of joining a cabinet headed by Kallas. Both parties are set to have seven ministerial portfolios in the 14-member government, which would muster a majority at the 101-seat parliament. Afghanistan authorities say they have rearrested 600 Taliban members who were previously freed from imprisonment. Afghanistan's National Security Advisor, Hamdullah Mohib, made the announcement Sunday, alleging the men in question had returned to the battlefield to plot deadly attacks against government forces and civilians. The men had originally been freed as part of a peace-building agreement between the United States and the insurgent group. Under the February 2020 U.S. Taliban deal, the government had released more than 5,000 insurgent prisoners in exchange for 1,000 security personnel. Mohib accused the Taliban of failing to live up to its commitments to reduce violence and work toward a nationwide ceasefire. The World Health Organization Director General says vaccines could bring the pandemic under control. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus said vaccinations are underway in more than 50 countries. However, all but two of those countries are high or middle income countries. Tedros saying, quote, "We must work together as one global family to ensure the urgent and equitable rollout of vaccines." COVID-19 infections have been unrelenting in Spain, especially following the holiday season. The surge has threatened doctors and nurses' mental health. In Barcelona's Hospital del Mar, the critical care capacity has more than doubled and is nearly full, with 80% of ICU beds occupied. Via remote, I'm Liz Palka, VOA News.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington, D.C.
Just like the war, just like the Ebola, this too will pass. You know, we're just optimistic, you know, and hoping for the best. We're hoping that this disease ends hopefully by the end of this year. But we're very hardworking, optimistic, prayerful, and hopeful people.
The Sierra Leonean government plans to impose a two-week coronavirus lockdown beginning Monday.
I do hope that through the emergency state, the government will put in place a strong measures to improve the situation, security in the country.
The government in the Central African Republic declares a state of emergency that will expire in 15 days.
People think that the authorities, the security service, the politicians are not doing enough to prevent and to put an end to this scourge. Some even think of the involvement of some politicians for hidden ends.
And residents in the DRC's commercial capital, Lubumbashi, expressed concern over increasing cases of rape and burglary. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The Sierra Leonean government has announced plans to impose a two-week initial lockdown in the capital, Freetown, beginning Monday. This following a surge in cases of infection of the coronavirus. The plan also includes imposing a night curfew in other parts of the country. Restaurants and bars will also be affected by the plan. Some Sierra Leoneans blame state institutions for the surge in cases of infection. They say authorities failed to teach citizens about the benefits of mask wearing, social distancing, among other measures to stop the spread of the disease. Others blame misinformation and traditional beliefs for the surge. Marianne Kaikai is the CEO of Madame Woki Fashion. She teamed up with partners to donate face masks to citizens in the capital, Freetown, and beyond. Ms. Kaikai tells me that it is the collective responsibility of all Sierra Leoneans to help in the effort to limit the spread of the disease.
The numbers keep going up, and I think a lot of people are looking forward to the lockdown. It means, you know, our life has to change a little bit, or our routine has to change a little bit, but not in the most drastic way, because people could still go out, but not after 10 p.m. at night, and you can still go out in the morning, but not until after 6 a.m. in the morning. So I don't think it's that bad. I think the decision that the government and the NAC took, I think it's the right decision. For 2 to 3 months, Sierra Leone had zero number of cases, and with the way that the numbers are going up, I think it's the right I think it's the right decision that the government took. And I guess a lot of Sierra Leoneans understand that it's, you know, it's for our safety. You know, that's why the government has implemented such a decision.
A lot of people, I understand, refuse to wear their mask in spite of the efforts of the government, as well as your organization, pretty much giving people face masks to wear as part of the effort to reduce the coronavirus. Why was this so?
A lot of people refuse to wear, you know, face masks at the start of the COVID epidemic in Sierra Leone, because a lot of people did not believe that, that we had a COVID epidemic in Freetown. A lot of people thought that it was fake news, you know, and based on the fact that they hadn't seen anybody that they were close to affected by the virus or by the epidemic, they just thought, okay, well, this is just, you know, another way, another money-making scheme that that people developed. But then when they started hearing about people that were family members or friends that were affected by the disease, who were admitted for a couple of weeks, you know, some people lost their loved ones, I think that was when people started realizing that, oh, wow, you know, this isn't some type of propaganda, like it's real, you know, and we have to protect ourselves. So I wouldn't say people aren't wearing face masks, but then the population of people that are not wearing face masks compared to the people that are wearing face masks is not that high. But then with this new cases of infected people, I think a lot of people are like putting precautions in place, like we're still washing our hands. We have a lot of these sanitary buckets in the banks and a lot of offices that you go to, as well as people's homes. You know, the awareness is there because they've also been like a lot of video and television campaigns. So I think people are starting to like be more conscious about protecting themselves.
I understand some critics of the government are of the view that this latest lockdown might not necessarily help in the fight to limit the spread of the coronavirus. What are you hearing on the ground?
I think when it comes to people's safety and health, we can't really play politics. You know, the priority now is making sure that we go back to having zero numbers of infected cases. And, you know, a lot of people who are traders who normally sell until very late at night are going to be affected because some of them have to work until very late to provide food for their families. But then at the end of the day, these are difficult times and we all have to make sacrifices, you know. So I don't think that is an issue at the moment, no.
Where do Sierra Leoneans go from here as the government imposes this lockdown?
Sierra Leoneans are the most resilient, hardworking people that you can ever think about. You have to understand that, you know, our country has been through a civil war. We've been through an Ebola epidemic. We've been through flooding and now COVID. We're very resilient. I think we'll continue being strong. We'll continue staying optimistic. And we're very prayerful country. I think, you know, we'll have faith that, you know, just like the war, just like the Ebola, this too will pass. You know, we're just optimistic, you know, and hoping for the best. We're hoping that this disease ends hopefully by the end of this year. But we're very hardworking, optimistic, prayerful and hopeful people.
Marianne Kaikai is the CEO of Madame Woki Fashion. She spoke with me from the Sierra Leonean capital, Freetown. The government in the Central African Republic, or CAR, has declared a state of emergency that will expire in 15 days. The move came after rebels reportedly tried to blockade the capital, Bangui. Civil society groups say the move is creating panic and fear among the population, forcing some to flee. Local media reports that some politicians are abandoning their homes to seek a refuge themselves and their families. This following reports of killing and kidnappings. Lina Ekomo is the coordinator of Women's Network for Peace in the Central African Republic. She tells me that the ongoing climate of fear and attacks on the population is unacceptable. She calls on the country's partners and the international community to intervene and to resolve the growing insecurity situation.
The emergency state in the country reinforces the fear of the population. The population who is already traumatized by the war. At this moment, most of the people are refugees. Others are displaced, and the population was waiting to hear good news. So the emergency state is not a good news for the population. A population who is traumatized by the security situation, a population who is waiting for the government to tell them that now the war is over, now people can move freely in the country. So the reaction can be visible in the street of the city. The traffic is very few in the city. Most of the people don't want to go outside.
I understand the rebels are around Bangui, the capital. How are people reacting to it?
The country is in war. So the first weapons of the both parties government and rebels is a communication. Each party wants to show that he is in the dominant position. But an important fact is that the rebels confirm their presence in the city when they attack the city on 13 of January, and also 3 days ago. It means that they are not far from the city, that they are already in the city. So the population is not moving far from the house. People don't want to go outside and to stay late outside. The population is living in fear of the attack of the rebels. And the schools are closed.
I understand a lot of citizens are afraid. They don't want to speak because there is an increase in kidnappings and killings in all parts of the country. The people that you've interacted with, what are they telling you about the situation?
Yes, cases of kidnappings have been reported. And the population is continued to be afraid about this. So currently many people from political opposition leave their house and are living at another place because they want to protect themselves and to protect also their family. And because of that, the situation of killings, of kidnapping and killings, people are afraid to talk about the political situation. This is a terrible situation, and we cannot accept this because we are acting for peace, and our message is that no reason is available to kidnap people, to kill people.
With this imposition of the state of emergency, does that affect the work of the UN groups, including OCHA, in the country that provide much needed humanitarian assistance to the people in the Central African Republic?
Before the declaration of state of emergency, no humanitarian organization was able to assist the population in the provinces because of the presence of the armed group. Now the state of emergency make the situation more complicated. You can ask directly the OCHA staff or the UN staff who are working here in Central African Republic, but I know that and now there are hundreds thousands of displaced people in the country, and the number of refugees in the neighboring country is growing. This is a very, very bad situation. I do hope that through the emergency state, the government will put in place strong measures to improve the situation, security in the country. And I take this opportunity to express my deep concern about the women and the kids who are suffering in the provinces.
Lina Ekomo is the coordinator of Women's Network for Peace in the Central African Republic. She spoke with me from the capital, Bangui. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, or DRC, residents in the commercial capital, Lubumbashi, are expressing concern over increasing cases of rape and burglary. They are also concerned that the recent imposition of a curfew to help limit the spread of the coronavirus will cause a surge in crimes, including rape. This after local media reports increasing cases of burglaries and rapes. The coverage, which include interviews with victims of the crimes, mostly women, say men in uniform carry out the violence. The victims and some civil society leaders say rogue elements in the security institutions could be complicit in the crimes. Civil society groups also warned residents that there has been a surge in cases of murder, burglary and rape in Lubumbashi and surrounding areas. Impiana Donat Benbella is the executive director of Action Against Impunity for Human Rights. It tells me that the authority should investigate and prosecute those responsible for the attacks to serve as a deterrent.
For nearly 5 years ago, insecurity in Lubumbashi has not been named. Men and wearing military and police uniforms stole, killed, and raped during burglaries at night. Shortly before leaked to COVID-19, there was a lull. I have a few, there has been cases. The question that is, who are the perpetrators or the authors when only the military and police are allowed to work between 9 p.m. and 5 a.m.?
Donat, have the authorities determined the these attacks and rape on women?
It has happened that bandits are presented to the provincial governor. They have been presented several times. Without being tried, they were taken to Angenga prison, more than 1,000 meters from Lubumbashi. Seven bandits are alleged perpetrators of the murders and rapes were presented through. This January 12, currency traders attacks in the center of the city in the morning hours. Three of them are arrested and prosecuted. They cited a criminal police captain as the arms supplier. They apprehend bandits, but is still no change. Most of people think that there are soldiers and police officers involved. At the last parade, General Karawa, the head office of police in the province, want the black sheep in the police. Generally speaking, they are not determined.
So how are residents in Lubumbashi feeling about what the authorities can do to stop this violence against women, including rape?
People think in different ways. Some of them believe that the military and police and the command should be rotated after 2 years. Others think the black sheep are rotated out the police and the army. Finally, there are those who would like to see justice play its role at ACDH, Action Contre l'Impunité pour les Droits Humains, Action Against Impunity for Human Rights in English. We asked the provincial authority to organize the state general on security, during which community leaders, civil society organizations, security services, and political administrative authorities will have to classify the perpetrators of insecurity and rapes according to the degree of nuisance and to adopt in a participative or participatory manner strategies corresponding to categories of criminals.
Do the residents in Lubumbashi feel or think that the authorities, including the politicians, the governor, and the security services, are doing enough to prevent this increased cases of, you know, banditry, breaking into homes, and raping women in Lubumbashi?
People think that the authorities, the security service, the politicians are not doing enough to prevent and to put an end to this scourge. Some even think of the involvement of some politicians for hidden ends. The security service do not have the appropriate operational and organizational capacities to make end to this endemic insecurity.
Impiana Donat Benbella is the executive director of Action Against Impunity for Human Rights. He spoke with me from the DRC's commercial capital, Lubumbashi. The government in Mozambique is assessing the situation following the landfall of tropical storm Eloise, which occurred in the early hours of Saturday morning. Officials are working to determine how to effectively deploy relief items to victims of the tropical storm. Meanwhile, the Red Cross is also working with the government and other partners to assess the situation to determine the best way to help those adversely affected by the cyclone caused by the storm. Gomaz Husenov is the head of the Red Cross country office in Mozambique. He tells me that his organization has deployed teams to help those affected by the disaster.
So after landing of the cyclone, the information we are getting that there is the impact in regards to the devastation is not as greater as we were initially anticipating. However, this cyclone brought a lot of floods to the country. So right now, IFRC, I am talking about the International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Society, together with the Mozambique Red Cross, involving with other humanitarian actors in the country, are responding to this massive flood with different relief items. The cyclone made the landfall only this morning. Therefore, it is at 8 o'clock this evening. This cyclone is exiting or leaving Mozambique. So the assessment by the government has not been yet carried out. There have been several discussions in terms of to determine how many people are affected and what kind of the humanitarian support will be required.
Based on the experiences that Mozambique has had with cyclones, what do you think usually is needed by those adversely affected by massive floods, as you spoke about?
Correct. So there are two things we are looking at. Because it is not anymore the destruction, meaning that the wind is destroying the roofs or the houses of the people, and I just wanted to add, the condition of the houses in Mozambique is quite primitive, meaning they are not really built to stand a very big wind. So we are very much looking to the operation that will be on the flood. But when it is a flood operation, we are looking at the projects such as water and sanitation, health, livelihood, because the people, the crops, the people will lose their crops and they will lose their livelihood. And we are also looking to some of the hygiene-related activities. The clean water will be very important. The hygiene for the people will be very important. So we will also include to our operation some of the shelter-related, because not all the houses have been destroyed, but some of them will require attention as well.
How swift will the coordination between you and the efforts by the government to meet some of the immediate challenges that some of these residents are facing due to the landfall of the cyclone?
The IFRC, together with the Mozambique Red Cross, is a part of the national government coordination group. There are different kinds of, we call them clusters, whether it's a shelter, health, logistics, and etc. So we are part of this cluster. The coordination with the government is extremely important to us. Why? As a Red Cross, we are the auxiliary to the government effort to meet the humanitarian challenges or emergencies happening in the country. So we have been, there is also a humanitarian country team, the UN organized through the OCHA, with that we were participating as well. So we are trying to coordinate the operation as much as possible together with the government, avoiding duplication.
So what is the message here to the people who are adversely affected by the cyclone?
The message to the people affected by the cyclone is that to deliver the humanitarian relief they require as soon as possible.
How long do you think this assessment will take?
Absolutely. Because before we are going to discuss to this view, we were having a coordination meeting with all the movement partners in the country. And one of the things that we heard from the initial findings that the roads are in a very, very bad condition because of the flood. And the second thing there is accessibility, meaning that the roads are fairly bad, so they're going to be flooded, and it's impossible in some areas to reach there. So for us to go for the emergency appeal, the data collection and the assessment should be done within 48 hours. So we are putting all our efforts in order to get the statistics and information as soon as possible so we can launch our appeal and get the support, financial support required to be able to assist the people's needs.
Gomaz Husinov is the head of Red Cross Country Office in Mozambique. He spoke with me from the capital, Maputo. It's the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Douglas Impuga and music from our African collection. But first, the World Health Organization is warning that conflict in Ethiopia's northern Tigray province and the consequent disruption of health services could lead to the spread of deadly diseases there. For VOA, Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
Ethiopia's November military assault on Tigray has caused a major break in the humanitarian pipeline there. The United Nations estimates that over 4.5 million people, about half of them children, need assistance. The World Health Organization and other agencies have been granted only limited access to the region. WHO officials who recently visited the area say many hospitals and clinics are only partially functioning. Healthcare workers have been displaced and essential services disrupted. WHO Health Emergency Officer Teresa Zakaria warns the disruption of essential health services has severe consequences for the population, particularly children.
From January to November last year, over 400 cases of measles in children were reported. With disruption to routine vaccination, this number may increase significantly in the near future. Over 9,000 cases of malaria were recorded, and when compounded with malnutrition, the fatality due to malaria among children can increase up to threefold.
WHO reports the incidence of COVID-19 in the Tigray region is higher than the average for the country. Up to November, more than 6,700 COVID-19 cases and 47 deaths were reported. Zakaria says COVID-19 response activities initially were shut down and have been slow to pick up, posing a major health risk. She says referral hospitals cannot accept patients with serious conditions. This, she warns, could lead to a surge in preventable illness and death if health services are not resumed immediately.
With most disease prevention activities interrupted, and based on what we know of past history of outbreaks, the risk of spread of COVID-19, measles, cholera, malaria, yellow fever, and meningitis is very real. And other health conditions are also left untreated. However, without a functional disease surveillance systems, we are not able to gauge the epidemiological situation and we are flying blind.
WHO says, with the help of other organizations, it has been able to send needed medicines and supplies to health facilities in Tigray, but much more needs to be done. It is calling for greater access to the region and for more financial support from donors. To date, it has received less than half of the $9.8 million it says it needs for its humanitarian operation. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
A recent surge in coronavirus cases in Zimbabwe has resulted in deaths of two cabinet ministers in 2 days. Zimbabweans have taken to social media to blame President Emmerson Mnangagwa's government, which takes senior officials abroad for treatment instead of rehabilitating the country's collapsed health delivery system. For VOA, Columbus Mavunga reports from the Zimbabwean capital, Harare.
Since Friday night, when the government announced that Joe Matiza, Zimbabwe's transport minister, had died of COVID-19. Some citizens on social media have been blaming the government for neglecting the country's healthcare delivery system. One of them, a 31-year-old accountant, Munashe Bradnick, says Zimbabweans are not celebrating the deaths of senior government officials.
I'm not so much concerned about their deaths, but how they lived. I think I'm mourning the lives that they spent killing others, looting resources, instead of spending on education and health, which would have saved them at this crucial moment. So reminding them that they should have spent money on education and not looting is not a celebration, but it's just a lesson to those who are remaining in ZANU-PF. We must not be killed for demanding better health, because COVID is not a respecter of persons. Yeah, when it comes, it doesn't choose your office. It doesn't respect your status in society. It just kills you. So here we are not celebrating anything, but we are just reminding them that life is sacred. Even for us, we also need to survive.
Following the surge of COVID-19 cases and deaths, Zimbabwe's Deputy Health Minister, Dr. John Mangwiro, said in a statement, complacence and negligence over the festive season were major causes. He said people should take more precautions and adhere to the dusk to dawn curfew government imposed early this month. Clifford Chachwayo is the spokesman for the Movement for Democratic Change Alliance. He says the recent surge in coronavirus cases, which claimed three ministers this month, confirms that lockdowns alone have failed to contain the pandemic.
Zimbabwe has more than 90% of its population in the informal sector, and those who are in the streets just roaming around. Those are the people who doesn't have the money to go to China. Other government officials, they are able to jet to China to get proper medical things. Our health institutions, they are in a sorry state. For years, government has not showed interest in upgrading them, in making sure that our health institutions are equipped with the proper and adequate equipment. Our frontline workers, they don't have proper PPEs, drugs, even oxygen.
In a State of the Nation address broadcast Saturday on national television, President Emmerson Mnangagwa said his government was assessing coronavirus vaccines that have been developed worldwide, but he was worried about the spike in COVID-19 cases in Zimbabwe. Coronavirus has now infected more than 30,000 citizens and claimed nearly 1,000 lives, including four cabinet ministers and several senior officials. Some Zimbabweans blame Mnangagwa and his predecessor, the late Robert Mugabe, for the country's dilapidated health delivery system. Zimbabweans said the two never bothered to upgrade hospitals or adequately pay health workers who have recently been on strike for PPEs and poor salaries. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare, Zimbabwe.
It's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Douglas Mpuga. Hello, Douglas.
Hi, Peter, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. Football governing body FIFA has said players who compete in Europe Super League will be barred from international competitions. FIFA and the six confederations say that such a competition would not be recognized. FIFA said in a statement, any club or player involved in a closed European Super League would, as a consequence, not be allowed to participate in any competitions organized by FIFA or their respective confederations. FIFA also stated that its Club World Cup and the confederation's respective tournaments were the only club competitions recognized. FIFA plans to expand its Club World Cup to include 24 teams from the six confederations. The forthcoming event in Qatar, postponed from 2020, will feature six teams. Meanwhile, FIFA President Gianni Infantino has urged officials of Cameroon's Football Federation to respect a decision of the Court of Arbitration for Sports annulling elections held in 2018. On January 15th, the court cancelled those polls which saw Sidon Mbombo Njoya voted in as president, after several amateur clubs challenged the procedure, which they said was flawed. The ruling, which coincided with the start of the 2020 African Nations Championship CHAN, instead of imposing a new normalization committee to run the Cameroonian Federation, has recommended that the current board prepares for new elections. It is the second time in recent years that elections at Cameroon's Football Federation have been declared void. In 2017, the polls that had seen Tombi Aroko Siddiqui voted in as president were annulled by the Cameroon National Sports and Olympic Committee's arbitration chamber. Still in Cameroon, Zambia needed a late goal to earn a 1-1 draw against Guinea in Group D of the African Nations Championship CHAN on Saturday. The result means both Zambia and Guinea maintain their places at the top of the group with 4 points apiece, having won their opening matches last Tuesday. Zambia will play Namibia in the final group game on Wednesday, while Guinea face Tanzania on the same day. And the World Athletics president has said he remains confident the Olympics and Paralympics will take place despite reports suggesting they would be cancelled. Lord Cole is reported to have said the rescheduled Tokyo Games may have to be held behind closed doors if they are to go ahead in Japan this year. Ko, who headed the London 2012 Organizing Committee and is also an International Olympic Committee member, added that in the event of a cancellation, it was not a realistic solution to push back Paris 2024 and Los Angeles 2028 in order for Tokyo to host the Olympics in 3 years' time. Last year, organizers decided to postpone the 2020 Games for a year because of the COVID-19 pandemic. But doubts over whether they would happen at all increased in recent weeks following a rise in cases in some countries, including Japan, where a state of emergency was declared in Tokyo. And that's it for this edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Douglas. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. And it's Sunday on Nightline Africa. This is the time we get to relax and reflect. A flashback with music from the continent. Je ne pourrai jamais effacer tes doutes. T'es de nature un peu jalouse. Je ne te promettrai pas la lune. Je ferai de notre amour ma première lutte. Et si tu gardes un peu d'amertume, je serai ton phare dans la brume. T'as l'impression que ton histoire se répète. Tu ne veux rien y voir. Pour des raisons que je conçois pas, tu doutes de moi. Wami wa hotito ulisha Wallahi mekutozi juta Nimbero ya ho mwanzani wangu. Et si tu tombes, je serai ton superman. Je serai ta lumière dans le noir. Je ferai de toi ma woman. Ma woman, ma number one. Et si tu tombes, je serai ton superman. Tu seras ma lumière dans le noir. Je ferai de toi ma woman. Ma woman.
Toka toi bibou ma penzi taki ama mimi na wewe dunia ni rione lada Nairobi ata Zimbabwe riso safiri bila usaza. Et si tu tombes, je serai ton superman. Je serai ta lumière dans le noir. Je ferai de toi ma woman. Ma woman, ma number one. Et si tu tombes, je serai ton superman. Tu seras ma lumière dans le noir. Je ferai de toi ma woman. Ma woman, viens près de moi.
Show.
Music from the continent, and we hope you enjoyed it from the Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC.
From the Nightline Africa team, managing editor Shaka Saleh, reporter Douglas Mpuga, and producer Saida Hamdoun, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, follow a secure road even if it is winding. I'm your host, Peter Clotet, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.